Sex and happiness.
Both enrich our lives, change our lives in ways that make life worth living. Yet it's surprising how few people can honestly say that they enjoy regular and fulfilling sex or describe themselves and their lives as happy. Want you to make me feel like I'm the only girl in the world. Like I'm the only one that you'll ever love. Host Lori Handlers helps you to explore, learn about, and most importantly, have great sex. And in the process, she helps you to experience real intimacy and happiness.
Sex and happiness.
You'll laugh a little, learn a little, and we hope put a smile on your face and a smile in your life. Now here's Lori.
Hi, everyone. This is Lori Handlers, and you're listening to Sex and Happiness, a show about sex and happiness. And today I have a really exciting show for you. It has to do with living an orgasmic life. You know, I've told you many times that I think your orgasm is so important. You need to have an orgasm at least once every day to keep your brain happy, to keep cells moisturized and moving in your body. You need to move that sexual energy in your body. And today my guest is going to be speaking about that. Her name is Candace Holdorf. She's a writer and teacher of sexuality and feminine orgasm with a specialty in the practice of orgasmic meditation. She's a regular contributor to the Good Men Project and ElephantJournal.com, as well as she maintains her own blog, The Orgasmic Life. She's currently working on her first book, From 6 to 9 and Beyond, Widening the Lens of Feminine Eroticism. Candace, welcome to Sex and Happiness.
Thank you so much for that beautiful introduction.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure to have you on the show. It's about time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So since the last time I saw you, you've been diligently working on your orgasm, diligently working on communicating sexuality and a really sweet portrayal of it to the masses. So it's great to have you here and be talking about this now.
For sure.
So Candace, tell us how did you get into your own realm of sexuality? Like, what started you out on this path?
Well, I have to say that I think, like many people, many women especially, but many people, I started out on this path because I felt afraid, quite frankly. I felt unclear. I felt I knew there was this deep, hungry, beautiful power inside of me, and I had no idea what to call it or how to access it. So just to give you a little history, I got married quite young, when I was 22, to the first man that I'd ever had sex with. And, you know, I spent many of those years in that marriage really unable to communicate what it is that I wanted, afraid to ask for the sex that I wanted, didn't know what the sex was that I wanted. And also during those years, I was anorexic, which was my addictive way of numbing my feelings, numbing my orgasm. So finally, at the end of 2008, beginning of 2009, was when I stepped away from that marriage, and I did something called a fear list. I wrote a fear list, and everything that I was ever afraid to do, I put on that fear list, and I said, I'm going to do everything on this list so that I know who I am on the other side of my own fear, because intrinsically, I knew that behind my fear was my desire and was my power.
So this is a really good tip for people. It could be a tip for anybody, women or men, to make a list and put on it everything that they're afraid of.
Right.
And so what was on your list, for example? Did you jump out of a plane?
Oh, my God. I totally was thinking that. And then I was like, you know, that doesn't get to the heart of my fear. You know, like, okay, that might be scary. There were things on it, something as small as eating pizza at Grimaldi's, which is this super famous pizza place in New York City, in Brooklyn, actually. And I was afraid to do that because I had this whole 8-year construction of food and diet in my head, and I was genuinely afraid. So there was that, as well as going to Burning Man for the first time. I was like, I want to do this thing. I have no idea what it's about, but I hear that there's like just crazy stuff going on. And I did, and it totally changed my life. To, I hadn't seen my father in several years, and I chose to visit him for Christmas just to like breathe and get back into intimacy and love with some of the relationships that I had left behind during my 20s.
I see. I mean, I just asked you that because people tend to think when they're going to face fear, you know, it would take skydiving or bungee jumping or something like that. And your list is really a life list.
Yeah.
It's things that really you had to get done in your life to move.
Yeah.
To move on, and you couldn't have possibly done them without. And they weren't the daredevil things. They were really natural things that one has to do in life to get past being a chicken or get to be who they are as a powerful person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so it was perfect that if 2009 was my year of fear, that within the first weeks of 2010, within 2 weeks, was when I was speaking with someone and he had mentioned orgasmic meditation and something in my body, I guess because I could feel my body because I had cleared a lot of the fear out in the past year, something in my body just went thunk, like boom, whatever that is, go out, find it and follow it all the way to the end. And
that's great. And I have had shows on orgasmic meditation, so you should just know that I don't know if everyone listening right now has heard those shows, but they can scroll back and get some references on orgasmic meditation in addition to anything that you're going to tell us.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. So what would be your, you know, what would be your take on it? What did it do for you? How was it when you first approached it? I do it as well. So
Yeah. Well, the biggest thing for me was coming to a space where feminine desire was accepted and where it was okay to have a playground of, you know, it's almost like being in the sandbox of sexuality. I didn't have to know the answer. I didn't have to know my desire in every moment, or I didn't have to have the smoking hot orgasm that was ready to like ejaculate all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
But that sometimes conventional pornography teaches us. It was a place where here, come and learn, and it's okay. And if something really deep and dark from the moldy, dusty corner of your closet comes flying out, great. That's beautiful and accepted. And so that was the biggest takeaway for me. It was like, oh, here's a space where I can explore that and allow that to open.
That's so great. And you're not doing it alone.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by other people who are exploring the same question as you, and it may look completely different for them.
Mm-hmm.
And their anxiety and their fears might be completely different. And then there's a place, I guess, in all humanity where there's just, or in all women. I mean, I don't know. I just think there are similar fears. I think people have much more in common than they than they think. And I think that orgasmic meditation gives people that chance to see, oh, well, actually, I'm normal.
Yeah. There's a lot of compassion that's bred through this practice and through, you know, many of the energetic sexual tantric practices that are available to us.
Yeah.
I also learned, for me, climax was never really like a quote unquote problem. It was just like, yeah, you know, I can masturbate and I could climax and I could do it quickly and that's not an issue. But what I learned was that something that seemed so against the cultural grain was that I was using my climax as a way to stop feeling, like just to get that sensation really high and then let it crash down so I didn't have to feel the expansiveness of my orgasm. And that was just, whoa, mind-blowing to me. Whoa, I never thought of it that way. I thought I was quote-unquote doing it right, because in porn it's like, well, yeah, if she comes in 5 minutes, it's a good job, you know?
Right.
So,
you know, you're making another point here, which is huge. I'm trying to think if I've ever had that come up on the show before, which is, I mean, I've mentioned it, but you're giving it a voice here that I haven't heard before. I'm going like, duh. But the what you're giving a voice to is, if a person learns sex from pornography, it's a kind of a big ripoff in that pornography doesn't actually demonstrate what true sexuality or orgasm is. It demonstrates what someone wants you to think or feel, or what that someone is thinking or feeling. Oftentimes when pornography is masterminded by men, we could just say the interest is in a fast release.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not making men wrong mm-hmm. for this or blaming them. I mean, I'm just saying that that's what people are used to seeing. If that is what people are used to seeing, they're robbing themselves of such a rich, packed, mm-hmm. deep, amazing experience, because there's so much more to sexuality and there's so much more to orgasm than hurry up and come fast.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So thanks for that. That's really, it's just nice to hear you weigh in on that and say, well, from porn, I thought I was doing everything right.
Mm-hmm.
And I come to find out, wow, there's so much more.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and in the practice of orgasmic meditation, and then in just being in relationship with men who could feel, and especially my new husband, you know, I've just got married 2 months ago, which has been an amazing experience. But being in relationship with men who could feel, you know, I could do the whole, like as much as I wanted, but they would be like, something's off here. You know, I couldn't play my trump card anymore of, well, I did have a climax and I moaned convincingly. So what else? And that's been such a blessing. And of course I've gotten to the point where I don't want that anymore. You know, I choose the path of, all right, let's go down deep here and mine the richness of orgasm. And, you know, that's why I'm writing this book. That's why I do the coaching that I do, why I call my business The Orgasmic Life, because it's not just the 30-second climax. You know, it's every moment it can be filled with orgasm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, this is a great place for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll talk to you more about that, what it is that you're doing, what the coaching is, what you're writing about in your blog, etc. We'll find out more about that when we come back. If you just tuned in, you're listening to Sex and Happiness. I'm Laurie Handlers, and I'm interviewing Candace Holdorf, who is a writer and teacher of sexuality. And we're going to find out more about her feelings. I feel this is a good one for you out there. This is empowerment and gives you a reason to want to have your orgasm for no reason except that you get empowered. So this part of the show is brought to you by Zestra. You're about to find out more about that, and we will be right back. My question for people right now is, if you're a woman who could use a little zest and zing in your arousal response, or maybe you know women or a woman who could use this, because many women say that their feelings of desire, arousal, and sexual satisfaction don't happen as naturally or as often as they'd like. So I want to tell you about Zestra, because Zestra was developed to meet this much-needed option for women. Zestra's safe and a patented blend of botanical oils and extracts, and it's created to help women have increased sexual sensations. Zestra comes in convenient single-dose personal packets. Each packet keeps the essential arousal oils and extracts free, fresh, and safe from light. And with application of Zestra, it starts to work within 3 to 5 minutes. And at about 10 minutes, there's something called the Zestra Rush. And that can last up to about 45 minutes. The great news is that Zestra can be used as frequently as you like during each sexual experience. Now, I'm somebody who believes that all women deserve sexual satisfaction. That's why I do this show, in case you hadn't noticed. So I believe that men and women deserve sexual satisfaction. So if you're a woman who isn't getting that kind of arousal response that you want, please call 877-426-8047. That's 877-426-8047. And please remember to say you heard about Zestra from Laurie Handlers on the Sex and Happiness Show. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and I'm speaking with Candace Holdorf. And in the last segment, we were talking about how Candace learned that what she thought was great sex, or what she thought was a great orgasm earlier in her life through her first marriage and then after that marriage, was really not. It wasn't fulfilling for her. It didn't allow her to go deep, and she didn't know any better until she did. And I think this is a good one for everyone out there, because I don't know who you are, but I want you to know that your orgasm can take you places that you never intended for, you never imagined, and that's why it's so important to keep having them and to keep going deep. So, and Candace is going to tell us more about that in this segment. So, Candace, you have a blog called The Orgasmic Life. So what are the kinds of things that you write about there, and what kinds of tips do you give people if you do, or questions do you ask?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Primarily, the blog started out as a place for me to share very vulnerably my journey and my experience, in the hopes that others would read it, or really, I did it for myself, but obviously there was an extra component that, you know, making it public for others to read it and to know that they're not alone on their journey, or to have some clarity around, oh my God, this woman's in the same thing that I am. Oh, what a relief. I'm not alone. I'm not broken. My orgasm isn't wrong.
Sure.
Yeah. And so primarily it was an outlet for me just to share personal experience. As the blog and as my writing and as I've been invited to write other places has grown and evolved, I have been shifting more towards providing information into relationship, into dynamics between masculine and feminine energy. I just submitted yesterday an article on how taking space can save your marriage, because a lot of us think about, you know, making time together and spending time together and quality and being up each other's butts all the time. And for me, it's like, whew, I really need to take, I'm extremely feminine in my energy and my husband's extremely masculine. And if we don't allow those poles to have some space, the tension and the charge and the passion is kind of like being smothered. A lot of what I'm writing now through my blog is the actual learning of my relationship and what I can teach people through that.
That's great.
Yeah.
And so it just feels very impactful for me that you're writing like that. It's empowering to people, I think, to read about someone else's journey that way. And I imagine that the feedback that you're getting is tremendous.
Yeah. I get a lot of people saying like, oh my God, I had no idea anyone else ever felt this way, thought this way. You put words to something that I've been feeling, but I didn't know what it was. And just having that feedback is like, oh, it's just such a blessing. And I'm extremely grateful to anyone who's ever read any of my writing. And it's just such a tremendous gift.
That's wonderful. Now, what would you say is the difference between porn and erotic? You know, we touched on it a little bit in the first segment about how if you're trying to learn sex from pornography, you're not really learning about yourself. You're learning about somebody else's idea about sex. But how would you define the difference? We've done that a few times on the show too, since I was involved in an erotic film festival. So it's different. And how would you say?
Well, for me, pornography is a business. And what businesses, you know, good business models do is they keep you hungry. They keep you wanting more. They keep you, you know, it's kind of like almost like an addictive way of relating to sexuality. You kind of get this filled up hit for the moment from something outside of yourself, and then it wanes, and then you got to go back for more. And I think that the term that I like to use is erotic voyeurism, if we're talking about in terms of watching other people or watching sexuality outside of ourselves. Erotic voyeurism invites us to fill our own desire, fill our own hunger from within. It invites us to take a look at our own sexuality and say, what is it that I want? What is it that lights me up? And I find that the way that we relate to conventional porn, I don't want to lump all porn together because I know that there are some people in the world creating a different kinds of pornography. But conventional porn, you know, 90% of the porn out there,
right,
is used as, like I mentioned, an addictive habit. So it's used to numb and to comfort our sexuality or numb our feelings, as opposed to stoke and invite and light up our sexuality. And it keeps us from being present in the moment. And I think that's where a lot of people have problems with, you know, if it's premature ejaculation or not being able to get it up, or or women who just feel frozen in their sex because they feel like they have to perform. There's all this performance anxiety that comes up because we have this thing on top of us that's telling us what sex is, and we've never had the opportunity to have it invited out of us. And I think erotica and erotic voyeurism does just that. It invites out our own authentic flavor of orgasm and sex.
That's brilliant. That is simply brilliant. It really, really is. What you described porn as, conventional porn as, is really the same way people use food.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's interesting that you had anorexia in your background, and then you start describing porn, and it sounds like how people are eating.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's really brilliant. It's a brilliant observation about it, and that people are using it to numb rather than actually feel something.
Yeah. When I started orgasmic meditation, or just, you know, the whole dive in, you know, the work that you do, you know, I totally immersed myself in that for a bit, and all of that wonderful, wonderful exploration really highlighted to me how sexuality is a great analogy for all these other areas of my life where I wasn't showing up, where I was dependent upon something else to comfort and numb my feelings rather than living in the prickly, dynamic truth of who I am. And food was definitely high up there on my list that I had to come to terms with and that I'm still learning from. You know, food is a great teacher for me.
Yeah, I imagine so. And I imagine it is for other people as well. I just hadn't heard porn described that way, or even said that it was used that way. Mm-hmm. You have a poignant way of pointing that out. So erotic voyeurism. Let me see if I can get really clear on that.
Mm-hmm.
What you mean by erotic voyeurism is actually watching yourself in the process. Is that what you mean?
Well, when I say erotic voyeurism, it's not necessarily that I'm seeing myself on screen or on the canvas or in the book or whatever. But I am talking about, you on the surface, you may see someone else or someone else's representation of sexuality and orgasm, but you metaphorically see a piece of your own sex within that. You know, it can be as simple as a Georgia O'Keeffe flower painting that very much looks like a vulva, all the way up to, I wrote an article about this for the Goodman Project, and there's an artist named Clayton Cubitt who videotaped women but just their faces as they were reading from a book and having their clitorises stimulated by a vibrator. So you're watching this evolution of a woman trying to hold herself together and share extremely erudite literature. And in the process, she can't quite hold it together, and she's falling down. She's breaking apart. And eventually she gives over to this pleasure. And I really appreciated that because I saw a piece of myself in that, even though I wasn't physically on screen. Does that bring a little more clarity?
Yeah. I see what you're saying. Well, also, I mean, I had a guest on recently whose name is Lady Cheeky, Lady Cheeky L.
Yeah.
And she talked about meeting someone, and then how they got to know each other was by picking out portraits or images on the internet and sending them to each other and then talking about why this was a particular turn on or that was a particular turn on. I thought that was such a hot way of getting to know someone.
I love that.
Yeah. I said to her, wow, that is so brilliant. She said, yeah, we would just talk for hours about, I selected this picture because I loved the particular way that she looked or he looked or this particular thing they were doing. Some of it were little video clip vignettes and some of it was just photographs. Mm-hmm. And then how her business started was she realized she thought it was a private site that she was just writing to her lover on and he was writing to her on. And then it turns out that 40,000 people were following them.
Oh my God.
So I mean, the whole story was amazing, but it's what you're saying fits in with that paradigm. Like, I'm looking at what I want and what I like and how I feel and whatever through watching another or the art or expression of another and so on. I'm finding out more about myself.
Mm-hmm. And through that, I just want to emphasize, and it's great that Lady Cheeky was sharing that with someone else, because erotic voyeurism doesn't have that layer of shameful secrecy on top of it, like most pornography does. Like, it's one thing to do things in private, because privately I'd like to keep my private life to myself. I don't necessarily go out and share every little thing that's happening with my clitoris right now, you know? It's another thing when I have to keep it a secret. And I think,
right.
And I think erotic voyeurism is like, I am loud and proud and open about the fact that I'm a sexual being. And right now my boundary is to keep this part of me private. I might share it with my partner, but I'm not ashamed of it. Whereas most people, when they relate to pornography, it's in secret when their partner's not around or when their parents aren't around, and to try and like hide that nibble as fast as possible and get it done and over with.
Yeah, that's a really important point. Really. All right, well, we're going to take a break here again. And when we come back, I just want to ask you about the Good Men Project, because I see it often, but I don't know what it is. I want to let the listeners know about that. And then we'll go into your coaching and what you're doing with this new book that you're birthing. So we'll be right back. This is Laurie Handlers, and I'm speaking to you from Sex and Happiness Show, and Candace Holdorf is my guest. So please stay tuned.
Are you wondering what book to read to jumpstart your life, get the best from relationships, attain the deepest feelings of intimacy? Do you want the best sex along with great happiness? Get your copy of Sex and Happiness, The Tantric Laws of Intimacy by Laurie Handlers right now. You'll learn how to make love in the unknown, take the performance anxiety and reaching a goal out of sex. You'll learn subtle ways of communication and really important practices to empower you when dealing with an intimate partner. You'll let go of blame and struggle. Doesn't this sound great? Sex and Happiness puts the innocence back into sex and gives Tantra the respect it deserves. Take charge of your life, physically, emotionally, and spiritually with Sex and Happiness by Laurie Handlers, only $19.99 paperback and $14.99 ebook. Order your copy today by going to butterflyworkshops.com. That's butterflyworkshops.com for your copy of Sex and Happiness.
For weeks now, you've been hearing me talk about the Erotic Coast Film Festival and my film Beyond Dinner winning the award for the best short film. And you've been hearing me talk to all these guests that I met while I was there. And you haven't heard that much about the dinner, although in the show I did with Dr. Ava and Nancy Sutton Pierce, we did talk about what was in my film. I want to let you know that the film is about a ritual dinner that I invented called the Gate dinner. Gate means beyond in Sanskrit. And it's a very sensual 8-course dinner that starts with the forbidden, starts with dessert, and leads its way back around to other foods. But all the foods in the dinner are very, very sensual, very beautifully prepared, and the presentation is amazing. And in this dinner, aside from everybody projecting themselves through a meditation that I do to their highest self, having had boundary exercises prior, the men rotate around the table and they feed various goddesses, all the goddesses that are around the table. And even if you come there with a partner, the partner lets go, doesn't take things so personally, lets the partner rotate around and have a sensual experience with each person that's participating. In this case, it would be men having a sensual experience with different women and then working their way back to their original partner. If this piques your curiosity and interest, I want to let you know that these dinners are now available to you wherever you are in the United States. And what you need is 20 people who would like to participate, and you can get in touch with me at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com if you'd like to host a dinner like this in your part of the world. I would love to come to your and offer one of these dinners to you and your friends. And I know my chef would love to come too. Also, Antonio Tiggs, who you've heard on the show as well, would love to come and paint your servers. So your servers are all gold or all silver or what have you. So we have a little entourage that would like to come and make this such a memorable event for you. Please get in touch with me if you'd like to hear more about it and talk about the details. That's sexandhappiness@gmail.com. We're back with Sex and Happiness, and I'm Laurie Handlers, your host, and I'm speaking with Candace Holdorf today, and she's just given us, actually in both segments, she's given us some really great tips. One about writing a fear list. That's an amazing one. I don't know if I ever did that. I'll have to try it. And some other things like being part of erotic voyeurism and not having to hide what you're learning about yourself or what you're learning about sexuality. It's really good stuff. Very, very empowering. It just really means shifting the focus of how it's been in the past and how it could be reframed to help you grow. So, Candace, when you're coaching people, tell us a little bit about your coaching project. Oh, and I wanted to know about the Good Men Project. Mm-hmm. Why don't you tell us that for us?
Sure. The Good Men Project is an online blog and magazine founded in 2009, and the intention is to get a dialogue, get a public dialogue going about men and to help men talk about their experiences, about what it's like to be a man. You know, I think we have a lot of women's magazines, you know, Good Housekeeping and, and Elle, and you read about all these women sharing the more vulnerable emotional parts of themselves. And then men's magazines tend to be all about rock hard body and getting her to, you know, come hard and making a bunch of money. And you don't really see anything about, like, what was it like to grow up without a father? What was it like when you realized you were a gay man, and what was the emotional ride that came along with that? And the Good Men Project wants to bring out those parts of men, essentially, and make them okay. And just really start a conversation about what does it mean to be a good man? Like, it's just someone who, whatever that means for a man, but just to be a man in his integrity. And it may not necessarily look like the successful model that we've seen for a number of years in this country and in this world.
I see. So it's actually men being able to express and be really good with whatever, like being a place for a forum for them to share.
Yeah. And a forum for us as women to share, if it's a woman contributor, to share our perspective on masculinity and what has maybe worked for us, what hasn't, what we'd like to see more of in relationship to the masculine.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
Because when you were mentioning the men's magazines about having a rock hard body and all that stuff, I mean, when I think of women's magazines, I think of Cosmopolitan. And to me, that's the most manipulative piece of writing that exists on the planet. How to manipulate everyone around you.
Right. Right.
And how to do it good, you know, how to be a really good manipulator.
Yeah. So. And I think a lot of those conventional magazines are bred and sell under the notion that there's something wrong with you. And if you buy this magazine, you'll be fixed. But the truth is we're all already exactly as perfect as we are. You know, there's always, there might be an opportunity for growth, but it's not that I'm broken. It's just like, great, you are where you are. Let's keep moving forward and exploring. And yeah, and that's why I don't ever want any of my work or any of my writing to ever be approached as there's something wrong with you and buy my product or work with me or da da da, and then you'll be fixed.
Right. You'll be set free.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because we're all already free.
This is a good segue into your coaching practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So your coaching practice, who comes to you, why they come to you, what might be a typical coaching session? I know I'm asking an impossible question because there's nothing typical, but do you know what I mean? Like, give us a sense.
Yeah, great. People who come to me, they come to me through the door of, I want better sex, or I want to connect to my orgasm, or I'm having issues with ejaculation or anything like that. Typically, the people that I work with range from their 30s to 50s. I have worked with some couples as well. Primarily, I work individually with people, but I've definitely worked with couples and have definitely worked with couples in regards to teaching orgasmic meditation because it's a partnered practice. So they come through the door of sexuality, and then I usher them into the world of the erotic, which means that everything that they're experiencing in their sex, all the blocks, the hang-ups, actually express themselves in all areas of their life. So when I start to mine the landscape of their desire, and that's what I'll do in a first session really, is just, what is it that you want? And I'll just ask it over and over, what do you want? Well, what do you want? And not just, oh, I want him to blah, blah, blah. Okay, what do you want in relationship to yourself?
Oh, right.
Yeah. Not what do you want him to do? Not, oh, I want to please him. Well, that's lovely. And what's going to please you? Like, what would really light you up? So I start mining desires, and then all of a sudden, so many things come up about, like, well, yeah, God, I want to, like, be a writer and a poet, or I want to take an art class, or I've been stuck in this sales job for 30 years, and I've made a ton of money, but I am so being called to become a yoga teacher. It's just killing me inside. And so when you can start to admit every single desire in all areas of your life, you start to become really present to your body, to what's happening for you. And then when you can speak up in your life, then sex just becomes this opportunity to play and to practice. You know, it all starts to open up, especially in the sex and in other areas of your life.
It sounds terrific.
Mm-hmm.
So do you do sessions in person, or do you do sessions mm-hmm. on Skype or phone? Or
I primarily work over the phone or over Skype. I have done sessions in person. You know, I am in the Bay Area of San Francisco, California, but I do travel. I've been to LA, and I'm visiting New York City for 10 days, and I plan on doing some in-person stuff there. So I do offer that if it feels appropriate, mm-hmm. but primarily I work over Skype or phone, and it works just as powerfully.
Sure. Okay. That's great. I mean, it's just nice to know the scope of things and that people don't have to travel.
Right.
If they want to be with you, they don't have to travel to San Francisco
totally.
To have a session with you. They can be with you over the phone,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
which is great.
Yeah.
Isn't it great technology?
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We can do so many things now that we weren't able to do before. So that's, I want to go into, you're writing a book called From 6 to 9 and Beyond, Widening the Lens of Feminine Eroticism. Now, 6 to 9, is that like 69? I mean, I looked at that and I went, "What is she tongue-in-cheek here?
Right,
what is she
right.
saying?" So I have to just ask that before we, you know, get into the real meat of it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm glad you picked up on it, because it's exactly what I wanted people to think. In a way, I'm challenging the teenager giggly mentality that most people have around sex. So when we hear the word, like, it's a number, right? We hear 69, all of a sudden we go, hey, oh my God, 69. Oh, you know, like, oh, that sex position. And in the same way, you know, we say the word penis or vagina, and people are like, like, everyone's butthole tightens up, because we're talking about sex and genitals. And so I want to just say, like, yes, 69 and giggling around it is a piece currently of our sexual culture.
It's our sexual inheritance, actually, to giggle about our private parts.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So, and I acknowledge that it is what it is right now. And I want to take us from 69 and go beyond to really widely, as I say, widen the lens. And because part of this project is about bringing in artistic photography by an amazing photographer, but widen the lens on what sexuality, and specifically feminine sexuality and feminine eroticism, can look like. So yes, we can have the giggly part, which is where we are now. And my goal is to take us way beyond that. So yeah, you're very right in picking up on the 69.
Yeah, I looked at that and I said, okay, this is definitely a play on words here. Mm-hmm. She's moving us in a particular way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's great. Okay, so from 6 to 9 beyond, widening the lens of feminine eroticism, you know, we're going to have to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to find out all about the book and how people can support you in getting this book written. What's your mission of writing it? Okay?
Great.
So I'm Laurie Handlers. This is Sex and Happiness. I hope this show is making you sexier and happier. If it isn't, we're not getting our job done. I know it is, though. And I'm here with Candace Holdorf, and we are really having a good reunion. We haven't been together in a long time, and I'm asking Candace questions that are so empowering to me and to anybody involved here. We're talking about the real nitty-gritty of how it is to really own and possess your own sexuality and see how it connects to and leads to everything else. So on that note, we'll be right back.
Wow, sex magic. Laurie Handler's sex magic
the
course.
The workshop is really, really amazing. And we were able to create and generate this intense energy in a space of safety and love and abundance. And the magic really happens when she is free to let go.
That's pretty
creepy. That shouldn't be called sex magic. It should be called sex miracle.
That she's the strongest facilitator that I've had the experience with. And there was not a moment when I didn't feel safe or not supported. She was with us individually and as a group the entire time, so that allowed me to go deeper than I've ever had.
Where my lover got to come and orgasm over and over and over again. She was loud as anything, and she was like a wild animal, untamed and free.
It just will bring you into such deeper places within yourself so that you're able to share with your partner.
Sex magic, I'm still feeling it. It was beautiful.
The next sex magic course is August 2nd to 4th in Phoenix, Arizona.
What an amazing course, if I say so myself. But of course, you've just heard the testimonies. For more information, go to butterflyworkshops.com. Click on workshops and find out more about sex magic. It's magical.
Many times on Sex and Happiness, you've heard Lori talk about emotional release and how important it is. Well, now you can do emotional release in the privacy of your own home. In Lori's CD, Shamanic Release and Lati Han, she creates a safe and sacred space in which you can do the powerful work Lori is known for in her sacred sexuality courses. Lori sets you up with the proper positioning and breathing. Then she guides you through each emotional state to the beat of tribal African rhythms. This CD provides an easy way to do emotional clearing work on a regular basis. Order your copy of Shamanic Release and Lati Han today and watch your relationships walk free of emotional baggage. To order the Shamanic Release and Lati Han CD by Lori Handlers, go to www.butterflyworkshops.com right now.
We're back with Sex and Happiness. I'm Lori Handlers. I'm here with Candace Holdorf, and we're going to talk about her book, From 6 to 9 and Beyond, Widening the Lens of Feminine Eroticism. So, Candace, I know what it is to write a book. I know you have to have a mission. You want to get a certain message out there. So I know you've been telling us about that, but can you mm-hmm. encapsulate your mission for us
mm-hmm. yeah.
about the book? Yeah.
Yeah. In my fundraising campaign that I'm putting the finishing touches on, the biggest piece is to say that my mission is to shift our perspective from sex as commerce to sex as an expression of our deepest truth.
That's delicious. Mm-hmm. That's really delicious. Thank you so much for taking on that mission.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Yeah. I just see it around me all the time from every little, how can I get this sexual encounter to, and in return, I'll get my ego fed or I'll just get a hit of orgasm or something like that, all the way to, you know, I'm sure you have talked about this in previous shows, but, you know, oftentimes in sex, we have this attitude of, well, I went down on you and, you know, you climaxed, so when do I get mine?
I can't remember that being brought up on the show, like somebody not feeling that they got what they wanted from a sexual encounter. It's a good topic, but I haven't had that on the show. So that's a great one to start with.
Yeah, great. And so we tend to have this commerce-based view of sex, and rather than I'm going down on you because the feeling of the head of your penis in my mouth is just this delicious, smooth texture that just fills my whole body with bliss. We've lost that because our mind isn't in the present. Our mind is in the, I better get mine. Or it's in the, oh my God, I hope he thinks this is good. I hope he thinks this is good. Or I hope she thinks this is good, because if they don't like this, then that means I'm a bad lover or I'm a bad person. And, you know, we're completely not in the moment. We're in our heads and in the commerce of sexuality.
Mm-hmm. So how will this book empower people to let go of that?
Well, I'll talk first in the book about, like we mentioned earlier, about redefining eroticism, you know, redefining sexuality, redefining orgasm. And we haven't actually mentioned this, but, you know, orgasm being more than just climax, orgasm being that breathing, pulsing life force that births every moment, orgasm as power. So we'll talk about a new perspective on these terms. And then I'm going to write 6 short stories and 9 poems, hence 6 and 9. Right?
Thank you.
Yeah. 6 short stories and 9 poems. And I've got the poetry already written and 2 of the stories already written. Each of these stories will be attributed to a feminine archetype. And I love archetype work because it takes, these stories will use the medium of storytelling, which is already a very compassionate way to share information, which is why we like films, why we like theater. You know, we empathize with the characters. So it will use a very empathetic way of communicating with the reader, as well as when we bring in the element of archetypes, it automatically highlights, oh, I am this person too, or I have these aspects of myself too, because all of us have various archetypes within ourselves. So it really is a mission and a book about, ultimately, the bottom line is compassion. So it's just like compassion through sexuality, through sensuality, through eroticism, through re-education. I think that's...
So it isn't really a how-to book.
No.
It sounds very scholarly, and I don't even know what to call it, but it's definitely not. It isn't a how-to book. It's definitely a book about finding yourself in the literature, yeah. Finding yourself, your place in there.
Yeah. There'll definitely be scholarly aspects, you know, in the introduction, and I'll have a little bit about each of the archetypes before each chapter. So you get a flavor and a feel already before you dive into the story. But the most of it will be fiction based and poetry.
Wow. What a great project. So you're embarking on a campaign for this project, and tell us a little bit about that, because that's how I realized, wow, I have to interview Candace. You're on a campaign here.
I am on a campaign. Within the next few days, I will launch an Indiegogo campaign or a fundraising campaign to raise $20,000 for the book project. And the campaign ends on August 20th, 2013. Proceeds for this project will go towards hiring a professional editor. We'll go towards hiring a professional photographer who is already on board. Her name is Sequoia Emmanuel, and she's an amazing LA-based photographer. She's worked for Vogue, but she also just really brings out, highlights the multitude of feminine archetypal faces available. Mm-hmm. I really love her work. Hiring an editor, hiring a photographer, as well as the hair, makeup, styling team. Hiring a publicist, because, I want the book to get out there. I want the right outlets, you know, people like you and a lot of other people who resonate with the project to hear about it and to really bring it into the society, you know, another piece of healing potentially. And finally, to purchase a self-publishing package. I really want a really nice quality piece of art that I can share with the world. And I want to find the right publishing package for that. And the reason that I'm choosing self-publishing at this time is because my plan is to find just the right charity. I want to find a charity that ends sex trafficking. And I want to donate 10% of the money that I make from the book towards that charity, as well as any money that I raise above $20,000 to that same charity. I think giving back is a huge teacher of mine as far as holding and expanding your container for orgasm. I think a lot of the ways that I see people handling sex, especially in sex trafficking and all these really horrendous ways, is, you know, a lot of it stems just from our own internal sickness, our own inability to heal our deepest cultural sexual wounds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wonderful. It's noble. It's a big cause. It's a big thing, and it's wonderful that you want to give back with some of the project money. It sounds terrific. So if people want to find out more, like if they want to get in touch with you, mm-hmm. or if they want to find out more about this self-publishing book project of yours, mm-hmm. what should they do? Where's the best place for them to find you?
They can find me two places. One is my blog, which is www.theorgasmiclife.com. And that has up-to-the-minute information. I'm constantly putting up little video blogs and updates about the project, and you can find it all there. And you can also go to my professional coaching website, which is CandiceHoldorfCoaching.com. And there's a little tab on my website called The Book from 6 to 9. And you can click on that, and that'll have information as well as the link to the Indiegogo page where you can make a donation.
The Orgasmic Life is probably easier mm-hmm. for people to, but they might not know how to spell Candace Holdorf, so I'm gonna spell it for them. It's Candace, CANDICE, Holdorf, HOLDORF, coaching.com. So that's where you would find out more about Candace's coaching, and you could go to that tab called The Book mm-hmm. from 6 to 9. Mm-hmm. Well, Candace, I wish you the best in this project. I'm hoping that my listeners have gotten so much from this talk that I'm having with you, because I have, and you have a lot to offer. And I hope that they go there and they help you birth this project into being. I really do. Mm-hmm. So that's my little nudge to everybody.
Thank you.
To do that. You're so welcome. Thanks for being my guest today. And everybody, please tune in next time when my guest will be talking about how Facebook and other social media crack down on human sexuality, especially the non-porn kind, and don't allow people to express freely. We'll be talking about that. So please tune in when my guest will be an expert on that. This is Laurie Handler signing off for Sex and Happiness.
Thank you for joining us today for Sex and Happiness. To learn more about Laurie and her work, please go to butterflyworkshops.com or follow her on Twitter or Facebook. You can send her an email at sexandhappiness@gmail.com. And if you'd like to listen to podcasts of Laurie's previous show, Tantra Cafe, please go to tantracafe.com. We'll see you again right here next week for another edition of Sex and Happiness. Want you to know.